We've been told that the impeachment hearings of President Trump, which have been taking place the past couple of weeks, they're a monumental historic event that you must pay attention to. But we're not talking about that. Instead, we're focusing on a region of the world and one particular nation, where a long-asked question maybe has started to be answered, the significance of recognition and what it means, and whether an election could change things. We are talking about Israel. With us now to examine some of the country's current issues and events is the co-founder and executive editor of The Media Line, Michael Friedson. How are you today, Michael?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
TheMediaLine.org is where you can learn more about the facts and the reality of, well, as if it's never a lot going on, even more so in recent days. Let's start. I refer to recognition. The Trump administration, via Secretary of State Pompeo, has recognized the legality of Israeli settlements in the West Bank. What's the significance of that?
Well, if you ask the Israeli Prime Minister, he's going to tell you that it corrects an historic injustice, that it's really a pragmatic move, that it's the way things really are anyhow, and there's no point in beating a dead horse over it. To the President of the United States, his answer is that any issue that's a complete non-starter, get it off the table, and then there can be negotiations for a deal, emphasized deal, without the cluttering of these kind of issues. If you ask the Palestinians, it's a land grab and unacceptable. So really it depends on which version you want to adhere to, and there's probably a little mixture of all of the above. The Israelis will contend, and there's a very valid point here, the settlement issue for a long time has sort of been a political red herring. The parties have come to agreements, although not formal and not put into writing in any way. But if you speak to any pundit, any expert, anybody that knows the Middle East, they can pretty much recite for you what the final scene on the ground is going to look like whenever there's finally some kind of agreement. So a lot of this bickering over the issues is really for show. It's part of the posturing, and it's really part of the lead up to something serious happening. So from that standpoint, you'll notice that there really has not been the kind of disaster that has been foretold that it was going to happen if this recognition was ever given. The recognition was given, the angry words have come, but there's really no substantive change on the ground.
Although, if you want to be technical about the situation, the settlements were never, I guess, legally through any world authority or United Nations. I mean, you can pick out any standing authority. They were never directly declared illegal. Is that true?
Well, no. There's no. If you ask the Israelis, they make a very cogent point that it can't be an illegal operation if it hasn't been adjudicated as such. And there is no court that has that kind of jurisdiction. There's really no way that it can really be adjudicated. So really, it's a spitting match between the parties.
I mean, other than when the UN drew out the initial borders of Israel, maybe the UN threw a proclamation or a decision on that regard might be the only one other than the World Court in The Hague. But as you said, neither have been approached or approached the situation. Question to be that maybe finally having been answered, people have been wondering, okay, Iran and Syria, there's a unity, there's a cooperation, and obviously both are enemies of Israel, but Israel had been on the sidelines waiting and watching this past week. They chose not to wait anymore.
Yeah, they sure did. But that was largely in response to the status quo. Again, in the Middle East, there's always been a system of nuance, a system of unspoken, a system of practicality and pragmatism on the ground, and that really determines many of the day-to-day doings or not doings, particularly in terms of violence and attacking. And Israel's primary goal has been to prevent the flow of arms that would come typically from Iran into the Damascus airport and then through overland routes be taken to Hezbollah, which has at any given moment about 140,000, and that is the number, 140,000 missiles pointed at Israel. So the dynamics in the Middle East have changed in the last year or so. Putin has become the king of the hill. Putin has been deciding just how far Israel can have reign to do what they have to do to prevent the Iranian buildup in Syria. And a lot of the sparring we're seeing now is between Israel and Russia. In fact, Putin was reportedly to be livid at some of the recent raids that Israel has carried out against the armaments coming in and some of the locations. After the missiles were fired into Israel, the retaliation was brutal, and it supposedly, reportedly at least, has been a source of angst for Mr. Putin.
Although Israel did not specifically go after any Russian or Russian-associated targets.
No, not at all. You know, it's like Syria is like a big parking lot, and you got to be careful. You back up to turn around to get out, you're going to bump into somebody else. The skies over Syria, you know, with the Syrian Air Force, the Russian Air Force, the Americans, the Israelis, it's a real mess, and there has to be somebody who plays traffic cop, and that's pretty much fallen to Putin.
So with Michael Friedson, who is the co-founder and executive editor of The Media Line. TheMediaLine.org is the website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. I want to wrap up with the possibility of a third election in Israel since Netanyahu and Gantz had their opportunities and both failed to form a coalition government. And there is another option other than a third election. The parliament can say, okay, you two couldn't. And they could point to someone in the Knesset and say, well, can you? And give someone else a shot. What's the likelihood of that happening?
Very low. Very low. It's more likely, well, just to back up a bit, in Israel you don't vote for a person, you vote for a party for prime minister. And the president ultimately chooses amongst the parties that get the most number of seats in the parliament if it's a very close election. The president adds into the mix his subjective reading on which party is capable of putting together a coalition of 61 out of 120 seats. The president now has done something unprecedented because having two failed elections is unprecedented in history. He's viewing the parliament as a person. So what he's done now is hand the mandate to put together the government to the entire legislature through the person of the speaker, and they have several options they can do, but primarily what you're referring to is completely unblazed territory. It's all new stuff. If any member of the parliament can somehow get to 61 plus people who have seats in the parliament and they swear that they support the candidacy, that person can actually become prime minister. It doesn't have to go to the head of any given party. What's more likely, though, is that the speaker, whose name is Yuli Edelstein, will very possibly choose one of the two men who have already failed. And with the dynamics shifting a bit because of the state of affairs and because of the angst of the public and other intangibles, give one of those two men an unprecedented third option. For Bibi Netanyahu, it would be a third chance. For Gantz, it would be a second chance. And that's probably the way it's going to go, unless even that can't work.
Well, considering all that, we can add even more to that, because if Netanyahu is the one selected to take another swing of the pitch, he would then be running as a candidate who has been formally indicted with criminal charges.
Well, most observers are feeling that there'll be just enough of the voting base peeled away from Netanyahu because of the legal woes, that it might shift the scene enough that Gantz can try again, if he gets the opportunity to try again from the legislature, that he'll be able to pull it off this time. But again, it's never been done. It's new territory. They're kind of making the rules as they go along, and nobody knows exactly what's going to happen yet.
It is amazing to watch and to learn more and to get the facts about all this. That's why you need to tag in The Media Line as one of your favorites and go to is themedialine.org. That's the website. We've been joined by their co-founder and executive editor, Michael Friedson. Michael, thanks so much, as always, for your education and insight. Have a great day.
Thank you.